The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. We start with breaking news on a story that we've been reporting on for the last few years. Former Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte was arrested in the Philippines Tuesday, March 11th, on a warrant from the International Criminal Court. Duterte was put on a plane that evening bound for The Hague, where he will stand trial. Duterte has been charged by the ICC with crimes against humanity for the thousands of murders committed by police and quasi-official death squads in the name of his so-called war on drugs. Father Albert Aleo is a Jesuit priest in the Philippines and a member of the board of directors of No Peace Without Justice. He spoke Tuesday, March 11th at a side event during the 68th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs after news broke of Duterte's arrest. Let's hear Father Aleo.
You know, this kind of work, sometimes you feel alone. And every single person you meet with some interest in what you're doing is really a great consolation. So I'm Albert Alejo, a Filipino Jesuit who has worked for many years in the city where President Duterte used to be a mayor. And I can say he has done some good things. That is correct. But at the same time, it was at the expense of so many lives. And when he became president, I was transferred to Manila. And so they said, why are you leaving the southern Philippines? Well, apparently, we will meet again. I met again President Duterte, but this time around in a more sensitive way, because the first 6 or 7 months of Duterte's presidency, he killed an average of 1,000 individuals a month. And in the beginning, it was just news. I thank the photojournalists, especially the night crawlers who took photographs of these bloody victims. And you can see also in the eyes of the families, the pain. Why is this happening? That's the problem. And where am I in this kind of situation? I just happened to be in charge of giving sanctuary to the former killers who admitted to being part of the death squad. And so it was difficult. It's painful to be taking care of the families of those who were killed. It's another job to be talking to the former killers themselves, who I believe had a kind of a spiritual conversion and who had a mission. To tell the truth. They told me it was not enough to confess to one priest and change their lives. It was demanded of the spirits of the people they killed that they told the story publicly. But that, of course, was a very big challenge. And so, fortunately, we had another avenue, the International Criminal Court, and that was a kind of a parallel platform. While we were trying to deal with the crimes internally, we also had to explore the international community, hoping that this could be a source of justice if there's no justice internally. Now, what happened? So, as I put there, there are many victims. One set of victims would be those who were killed, and of course, the families. Now, with this arrest of President Duterte, there is a sliver of hope that there could be some kind of justice in really pinning down the main mastermind. Unfortunately, apparently, is the mastermind both of the killings and of the drugs deal. That's a difficult game. We have number two. The persons who are not killed but they are now forced into some kind of rehabilitation. And we need to also interrogate the kind of treatment that these people are being forced to. Now, okay, one paradigm would be punitive. Treat those who use drugs as criminals. Now, there is a changing paradigm of treating those who use drugs as patients, as sick, and therefore some kind of intervention, medical intervention, is imposed on them in various ways, medical, psychological, pastoral, and even spiritual. But then we need to really talk to the people who use drugs in their livelihood. And we have just finished module one of our research, dealing and talking with people who use drugs in their quotidian life. There is also another set of victims. Those who were used to kill, they were dehumanized as well. And there's hope, because some of them are converting, some of them are telling the truth, sometimes, you know, by force of circumstance. Now, that is another set of victims which are finding some kind of hope in this arrest. What I'd like to highlight in this particular side event is the other group that is seldom discussed, the prisoners. So I would imagine I'm the prisoner. I was not killed, definitely, I'm alive. I could see that the society is changing paradigm. Oh, those who are using drugs are being treated in terms of medical help, medical intervention. Oh, good. There seems to be a changing of paradigm, that from now on there will be new laws saying decriminalizing the use of drugs, etc., etc. Well, that's good. Oh, there's this news that Duterte himself and probably his main generals will follow. Oh, they might be sentenced accordingly. That's another source of hope. That's good. But what about us? The society is changing. The laws are changing, but we have to serve life sentence of 20 years or double life sentence of 40 years. Having been sentenced unjustly, excessively, during the time when the paradigm was punitive. What about us? And when I say us, it is a very personal us. Last August, I visited the Philippines, and I gave a seminar to the personnel of the National Penitentiary. It's called Believe It. And I said, now that I'm here, may I visit my nephew? Sure, Father. Where is he? He's in the maximum security section of the National Penitentiary. I said so. And when I met him, you know, he would like to cry, but he could not. So we just embraced. And I said, how many are you in the maximum security? 14,000. I visited also a friend, John Lozada, who was a whistleblower in the corruption in the previous administration. But he was in Spain. Why? Because he was about to be released soon. How many are you in the minimum? 1,000. The maximum security section has more prisoners, persons deprived of liberty, than the minimum. And what are these cases? 71% are related to drugs. There's been a 34% increase of imprisonment, incarceration during the war on drugs. Now, I'm calling for attention also. For me, this is equivalent to torture. And torture not just to those who are in prison, torture also to, for example, their wives. their children. For many years, how long can you sustain visiting them in prison? It's kind of difficult. And so last year I asked her around, do we have a benchmark in formulating sentence, formulating laws that have retroactive value? I was told, oh, there is the possibility of commutation, especially if you have good characters inside. Yeah, but these are piecemeals, one-on-one, especially good if you have some contacts with good lawyers, you know, your connections. But I think there is need for a rehash, a review of these laws, and including the interpretation of these laws translated into excessive penalties during the time when probably the judges were afraid that if they don't punish these drug users, they themselves will be punished. I heard that there was compassion in giving long sentences like that. Why? Because these sentences were seen as at least better than extrajudicial killings. So we have a choice between extrajudicial killings and excessive incarceration. Now, I'd like to call attention to this aspect of the war on drugs. There are many others, which includes a change of cultural mindset. I'm also calling for a kind of a mea culpa of the entire country, including the majority Christians. The Philippines is majority Christians, majority Catholics, and now we are in the period of Lent. I think we need to follow the example of the killers, to admit that there is blood in our hands. We cannot just celebrate that one person is going to be tried in The Hague. No. There is blood in our hands. Those hands with blood clapped, applauded all those crimes committed under the war on drugs. And I thank the international community for supporting. You probably don't know, but when the International Criminal Court made this kind of move, it was an international action that probably, most likely, and I'd like to believe, listened to international pressure actions of international NGOs. I thank David, before I forget that, he's been supporting us. And then no peace without justice. The fact is, he has not visited the Philippines. He has not enjoyed our beaches and our islands. And yet, he, representing many others in international action, have been supporting us under the radar. I belong also now to the No Peace Without Justice. Many people, even among those human rights advocates, are not aware of that. The No Peace Without Justice has been helping us connect with the International Criminal Court. So maybe I should stop here. I woke up this morning with this news. I did not know how to feel. Now I'm feeling it. And especially seeing you. Thank you for your support.
That was Father Albert Aleo, a Jesuit priest in the Philippines and a board member of No Peace Without Justice, speaking Tuesday, March 11th at a side event during the 68th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs. Again, former Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte will finally face justice. Duterte was arrested March 11th on a warrant from the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity and was put on a plane bound for The Hague, where he will stand trial. Duterte is charged with crimes against humanity for the thousands of murders committed in his name by police and quasi-official death squads in the course of a so-called war on drugs. This is a developing story. We'll bring you more news when it happens. Meanwhile, keep tuning in. This is Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now to the main part of today's show. Here's the second half of my conversation with David Borden, Executive Director of the Drug Reform Coordination Network and StopTheDrugWar.org. For many years now, DRC Net, StopTheDrugWar.org, along with a number of other NGOs, have been working to help provide input and perspective at these meetings. You and I were at that 2008 CND, which was one of the first, I think that was the first time that NGO members were actually allowed on the floor, inside the building on the floor. And you've been working on that ever since, doing a lot of great work. You and a lot of the other NGOs providing input and perspective, participating in and organizing side events at these things. The main meetings of the CND are now finally being webcast by the UN's primary media service, webtv.un.org, which means that these webcasts are now finally being archived. It's only been the last few years they've done this. For a very long time, there was no archive of the meetings available. I complained for years about the CND's lack of transparency. They're absolutely opaque. And that's why it's so important that someone actually goes to these things, report on what's going on, not just in the meetings that are webcast, talk about what's going on. I talk about people acquiring a carbon footprint the size of a charcoal Sasquatch, but the reality is we do need to have NGO representatives there. Sunshine, as they say, is the best disinfectant. Thank goodness for people like Isfan and Peter at Drug Reporter doing their work, videotaping and live streaming some of this stuff that's going on. The folks with IDPC and their CNDblog.org doing transcripts and providing information about the what's going on there in a written form. Anyway. I digress. So these CND meetings are coming up shortly. I know you've been involved in this for a while. What can we expect? What can we expect out of Vienna?
I haven't had a chance to study what the current resolutions are. Things had moved to an interesting point. So what's important to understand about Vienna is there's the UN in Vienna is there's a tradition of consensus there. It's not identical to how things go in other UN headquarters, New York or Geneva. I think it was last year or the year before, certainly, if not the first time, there was a non-consensus vote. And the tensions with Russia over Ukraine contributed to that. Countries are became more galvanized to oppose Russia, and the U.S. is a big contributor to that. The U.S. position had shifted to become more, devote more attention to human rights and good reforms and other things that may or may not agree with on all the details of, but also might not totally disagree with either. There's a big effort led by the U.S. on responding to fentanyl and recognition of harm reduction. So in Vienna, though, and there's still a lot of consensus that makes it hard to move things very far, so they change only very slowly. And everything's up in the air now with what's going on with the Trump administration. So we don't totally know what to expect. But there will be back and forth on harm reduction and how much recognition human rights gets. There'll be discussion, maybe even votes on scheduling one or more substances. The synthetic drugs are a big issue. And there's a debate, which our side has mostly lost so far, which is, should fentanyl analog drugs be placed into the most restrictive schedules? And to what extent, in some cases, are they really analogs of fentanyl, and will that hold back research on substances that could actually have treatment roles, medical roles? There has been more success in fending off international scheduling of ketamine. My first time back at the CND after 2008 was in 2015. And that was the beginning of, you know, for StopTheDrugWar.org, our very concerted international effort. China had sponsored a resolution to schedule it internationally. And there were hospitals, international health groups, all kinds of groups coming out to oppose it, and drug reform groups, an important part of the effort. Because it turns out in a lot of the world, they don't get much access to opiates, even for anesthesia and operations, and they need ketamine. And with scheduling, the same structural barriers that are affecting opiate access, even in clear cases of clear medical need, you know, will come into play. I'm not sure. I haven't had a chance to review the resolutions yet. Those are on the CND website that can be reviewed right now. So there'll be things like that. They'll talk about international cooperation and how to fight drugs. And there'll be some talk, but mostly from the margins, on regulating drugs instead. They'll definitely talk about marijuana legalization and the tensions of that with the UN drug conventions. But that won't affect much at the national level. We are doing a side event on Tuesday of the CND at 4:30 p.m. Central European Time. It's a partial shift, but only a partial one. The title of our event is Shared Mistakes. I'm not remembering the exact rest of my own title that I wrote, but societies address incarceration, the death penalty, and extrajudicial killings. We will have three speakers. One of them is Kemba Smith, very well-known advocate, herself a clemency and now pardon recipient, subject of a recent movie about her story. We will have someone who's joined us several times already, Father Albert Alejo from the Philippines, who's played a key role in the ICC case, but we'll talk a little about that and the extrajudicial killings, but more he will be talking about the case of his own nephew, who for low-level drug involvement is serving two life sentences, which in the Philippines means 40 years. And so we're going to talk more about incarceration there. And we will have an advocate from Malaysia, from a group, Hayat, that is opposing the death penalty and trying to address incarceration and drug policy reform. And there's hope. They've made some progress in Malaysia, and there's hope for more. And there's still hope in the U.S. Kemba's story in many ways parallels the arc of the issue of sentencing reform itself. So it will, at least some of the side event will be hopeful. And that will have hybrid participation as well by Zoom.
That is so cool. See, and those are the perspectives that need to be heard at this kind of a thing. I realize you may have some of them coming in with coming in via Zoom. Those folks who you just mentioned, those folks are the kind of people who really, I think, should be. Those are the perspectives that people at these meetings need to hear. These are the people that I don't know if they ever hear those kinds of perspectives, and these are the people they need to hear. You know.
You know, if one is in Vienna and can spare the time. Now, this year, side event slots are actually conflicting with the official sessions, which is unfortunate. On the other hand, we're getting 60 minutes instead of 50, which does actually make a difference. And we'll see. I don't know if it's seen as a permanent shift or there. But those who can spare the time, there are so many I think there were over 100 side events last time, and all kinds of perspectives. Lots are reform oriented, but the other events that aren't, those can be good learning opportunities as well.
The advantage of having this thing webcast by Web TV, you can see those plenaries. Even if you miss part of the general sessions, you can go online. You can rewind on Web TV. You can see the stuff that you actually missed. I mean, that's the beauty of having this now on their proper streaming platform with the archive.
Yeah, and so going back to what to expect, side events to go to, their official sessions to watch, their negotiations, some of which observers can go to, some not. There are in the NGO for NGOs. There are a whole set of dialogue sessions with top officials, various UN branches, human rights, drugs, other officials. So opportunities to engage at that level, and there are people to talk to. Often there's more access, not often, usually there's more access to high level people inside the UN than outside. Now for the US, things may get pulled back again, what we'll see, but lots of interesting people to meet. One year in the M Building Coffee Corner, which is one of my favorite places, there were these exercise bike things. There was something different about them. So it was kind of a display. Maybe some country put that. There were two of them there. And I went to try one. And the person next to me trying the other one was an Egyptian general, and would we enjoy talking to each other on matters of substances or other matters of substance? I don't know. It's an authoritarian regime in which the military plays an important role. But there we were checking out the bikes, and when would I ever have met him except at the UN?
And it may not, and talk about substance, maybe not, but at the end of it, this person has met someone. Oh, it seems like a reasonable guy. It seems it's all right. If I met him again, I would probably sit and have coffee, maybe. That's and then later he sees you talking, or he hears something that you're saying. Yeah. And it's like, oh, wait a minute, that's the guy I was biking with. Oh, I'm going to listen to this. May not agree with it, but maybe he listens. And ideas are like pollen. Once they're in the air, you never know who's going to sneeze. That was my conversation with David Borden, Executive Director of the Drug Reform Coordination Network and StopTheDrugWar.org. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's audio port service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.